Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical approach to herbalism, self-care, and the tarot. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 60th episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. This is Karina. Today, I am sharing an absolutely amazing and inspiring conversation with three people from the San Diego-based collective Bujitex del Barrio, and I'm super stoked on these people. I think this conversation is awesome. I feel like everyone's going to learn so much, and please go check out Anna, Anjelana, and Erie's work. I'll put links in the show notes, and you can follow them on Instagram, Bujitex del Barrio, also will be in the show notes. It's a really long conversation. The first interview that I did with three people, and then also it's the first interview I did on Zoom with the video on. So if you want to watch the full interview, I cut a little bit of it out, mostly just me rambling because that's what I do, third house stellium. But if you want to watch the video of the interview uncut, it's on my Patreon. And of course, as always, I love you, my patrons. Thank you for making this work possible. You can go to www.patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch. A pledge of $5 will get you most of the content up there and discount code for the apothecary and for tarot readings. And you basically get to hear about workshops I do before everybody else, etc. And it's just really important supporting independent media in this way. So if you have $5 a month for this work, check it out. And I want to get really into this quickly because it's a long interview. But another announcement is that I am beginning an application process for the Fall Plant Witch Mentorship Circle. This is the fourth one that I've done. And basically, it's a circle for 6 to 8 aspiring plant witches to talk about folk herbalism, spell work, making essences, relations with astro, herbology, and tarot, and really just have like a supportive community to work through with this, with like an anti-oppression lens, a lens of mutual aid and giving back and anti-capitalism. So if that sounds like what you're interested in, I'm doing free chats this week. You can sign up for a phone call to see if it's a good fit for you, but I'm looking for the right group of people to come together and really support each other. We're going to be doing this through election season, so I assume that it's going to be some intense times. So this is going to be a really important way for us to support one another in kind of an intensive environment. You can also check out the last zine that the spring cohort made. It's on my website, Rise Up Good Plant Witches. We'll be making the third Rise Up Good Plant Witches zine together. So yeah, check it out. I'm excited to talk to some new people who might be interested. And also, I want to say I'm always wanting to hear from listeners. You can always send me an email if Patreon is not accessible to you. And I'm looking for other people to interview. I'm looking for people that operate at the intersection of healing work and social justice, commitments to harm reduction, towards abolition, towards anti-capitalism and mutual aid. If that's you or someone you know, definitely send me an email. I'm always looking to connect with new people that I don't know about their work. And these are busy times. It's hard to always know what stuff people are doing out in the world. So hit a witch up. Emails in show notes, therisenwitch@gmail.com. But I hope you love this episode and definitely check out Bujitex del Barrio, support them in any way you can, and support these movements happening in your own communities. And if there aren't movements like this happening in your communities, think about starting one.
am here today with three people from Brujitech Del Barrio in San Diego, California. Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for having us. I love your work.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. So I would love it. This is the first interview I've done with three people. And I would love if maybe each one of you could just say your name, your pronouns, and like something about yourself.
Sure. That would be, my name is Irie, and I go by she, her, they, them. I grew up in Logan Heights, which is where our Brujitech was, our storefront was. I'm a visual artist, amongst many other things, community worker, organizer. I really kind of prioritize like youth issues and work with art for like healing, to facilitate healing. So art therapy is kind of my thing, and which is like what I'm going to go back for my master's degree for art therapy and counseling.
Awesome.
I'll go. Angelana's eating. So my name is Hannah. I am a brown mama of three littles. I am a magic medicine maker with a focus on physical and emotional pains. So I'm one third of Brujitech. I'm a Sag Sun, Gemini Moon, Libra Rising. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And I'm almost 40 years old, and I still haven't put a name to like my sexual identity. But and yeah, and I'm just living here, Kumeyaay
territory. Being cute.
Being cute. Shout
out to people who are almost 40 and still figuring shit out.
Sorry. This is my double Taurus in me right now.
Nice.
They always hungry.
Yeah.
Always. I need to always be eating. Hello, my name is Anhalana. They, them. I'm okay with other pronouns, but I'm trying to really get to the point of just being like they, them. I used to see she, her, they, them to make other people feel comfortable. I mean, I'm 36. It's the same thing. I think with our generation, we didn't have this stuff and that privilege of, you know, so it's like learning that now. I never identified with my gender or any genders. I actually never felt human growing up. I used to tell people I'm an alien. I mean, I still do. So yeah, Leo, Sun, double Taurus. And I am Boricua. I am mixed Black, Indigenous, Arawak, African Arawak, and colonizer. And I do a lot of the, I do herbal medicine, make a lot of tea, like herbal blends. I do energy work. I do various types of energy work. Everything I do is donation-based, sliding scale. I've been like that for a minute, and I also provide medic support, street medic support, so I'm a part of a medic collective. I'm gonna be teaching like how to take care of yourself. Like I call it like an herbal first aid kit, but it's really like an herbal first aid kit for like people who are providing medicine. I'm gonna be teaching that tomorrow at our little gathering. And I'm a fur mommy, little dog. And yeah, I live in Logan, and my herbs and apothecaries are here, and yep, that's it.
Amazing. Wow. That just like touched on so many things. This is awesome. So I'm saying like before we got started that as long as I've been following y'all, I've been really interested in your project because of like the aspect that you're doing this healing work, that you identify as like a radical, like women / femme of color collective, and that everything is sliding scale. But then like, you know, I don't know that much about San Diego, but I know that it must be expensive. And I'm really interested in like the history, like why you guys decided to start this and how it's worked being like a pay what you can, pay it forward, sliding scale type of group, and how it's evolved over time.
Can I say, to
begin with, as to why it's important to have sliding scale, I think Anjelana and Hannah can talk more about the process of that, but why specifically, like, for us and where we were located, like, the storefront being in Logan, being in a marginalized community, being in a low-income community, like, taking into consideration that factor, that these are the communities that need what we have, and they need to be accessible, especially in the midst of a time of, like, heavy gentrification, when a lot of people are coming into neighborhoods without that awareness of how they impact, how their small businesses, even if they are small, impact the economics of the community, and how that changes and raises rent and displaces, etc. So, like, wherever community you move into, whether, like, you're, like, a resident from there or not, like, you have to take into consideration how you, that kind of, your footprint, like, in that community. So it's very important for us to consider that this is a primarily, like, you know, Black and brown neighborhood, and, like, there's a lot of, like, students, single parents, you know, older folks, and that, like, we're saying that this healing is important, so therefore that our community, this community, needs to access it. So that's the basis, that's the premise of, like, sliding scale.
Yeah. Thank you, Irie. It's really interesting because I've always, like, charged myself, like, at, like, 30% markup of what I purchased it for. So really I was ready doing the lowest sliding scale. And that was, you know, working for me, but I wasn't really, like, that wasn't my main thing. It was my donation-based, like, energy sessions. But when we all got together and we were, like, you know, creating Brujita, like, Hannah was like, it has to be sliding scale. And for me, I was like, oh my God, that's gonna make my life more sustainable, because then there's gonna be people who are wanting to pay the higher end to help me be able to keep on providing either free or low stuff. So really that sliding scale really helped me, because I was able to be like, oh wow, like, I'm not, like, I was just like, yeah, barely making it with the stuff. But to me, I just always wanted stuff affordable, because all of these healing spaces and holistic spaces are always unattainable. I never felt like I was part of those spaces, even though that the stuff resonated with me. I'm like, this doesn't resonate. Like, what the fuck? Like, why is this so expensive? This is ridiculous. When I was going through my really dark, hard times, it was impossible for me. I had to do everything myself because I couldn't afford anybody. I had to, like, do trades in order to make things. And I just didn't want anyone ever to feel or go through what I went through, trying to get better. So for me, it works. And I feel like energy, like, the universe keeps taking care of me in, like, weird ways. Like, I mean, not weird ways, but if you look at it, that looks rough, but it's not. It's actually not. There's ways that it just flows back to you and it takes care of you. So I don't know. It's been working. And I think also too, I'm privileged where my partner has a full-time paying job, and I get disability from the military from my conditions. So I use my disability to give back to the community. My partners and my stuff is about, like, the community, but it works because it doesn't feel like, I don't know. It just feels natural. It doesn't feel, and we're taken care of. So.
Yeah. I just wanted to say that the sliding scale is, like Anjelana had said, the highest end is really just, like, regular, closer to regular retail. So it's not, I think people sometimes think that we're actually charging more, and it's like, actually not at all. Like, the higher end is, like, close to retail and probably not even, you know, a lot of people, you know, maybe are selling their, like, t-shirts for, like, you know, $25-$30, and Irie's sliding scale was like 15 to 20, like in a lot of their shirts. So just to give you like an idea. And we were very like, I don't want to say surprised, but we were very happy always like with people come in. It was maybe surprising to a lot of people that most people would come in and pay the high end.
Yeah.
And we always like also have had available like free things, because we would always be there to hold space and show and just give support and like herbal support. And people came in, and if somebody said, "Hey, I don't have any money, like, but I really need something," we always have something. We have herbal support, little baggies that we would make for people to carry with them, and we always had like little things, little magnets or papers, like with affirmations on them, or just like, you know what I mean? And they could just hang out and be in the space with us like for as long as they needed.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that y'all are doing that. And I think like, I love sliding scale, but it's like, there's so many nuances to it a lot, because like you're saying, like, I love, Angelina, what you're saying about how like people would be surprised at how many people will pay the top end of the sliding scale. And I found that too in my work. The people that pay the low end are usually the people that are most equipped to pay the high end. How it is. And I think that's like a bigger issue of like ingrained capitalism and white supremacy and just like globalization, and the fact that you can go to Walmart and get something for so cheap. And I was guilty of that when I was younger too. Like, I, you know, the quality like that's placed in like a globalized, colonized world on handmade items is not, it doesn't exist, you know? So yeah. I think like that's like what my hope is for like Pluto return, Saturn in Aquarius. My hope is that we will collectively move into a place where we start putting value, like we put our value back on creations that people and communities are making, and away from like big box capitalism, essentially.
Yeah.
How long have y'all been doing Rupee Techs?
2 years, 2.5 years.
And how has that changed in the last 6 months?
In a lot of ways.
yeah.
But change is good, you know, and I think like we always kind of say amongst each other, like, be like water, you know, and the thing is about being malleable, and like, you know, this time is asking a lot from all of us, and not just Brujitex, but as systems, you know, to rethink and to kind of like look inside and, you know, kind of reassess, reevaluate. And I think that's what we're doing. I think we're just reflective of this time and the space that we're in right now, which is like things can't be in the physical, but maybe they have to exist more in a spiritual and more an intuitive, more in a creative space. And that's, I think, where like Brujitex is, you know, right now, living and existing in that space.
Yeah, so we no longer have a brick and mortar storefront. So that is like, you know, a big change. And we decided that pretty quickly on, where we were like, this isn't really working and it doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
Our space was very, very small, and people were always really surprised when they came in. They're like, oh, I thought it was like so much bigger. And that, to answer your question earlier about, you know, money, that was one way we were able to get around it. We used every inch of our like 10 by 10 space, like literally it was so tiny. So that was one way we were able to also cut, you know, keep our costs so low, is that our rent wasn't too crazy. And then I think that we've also realized that we've turned so much to aiding, like, how can we help the community? Because we have been getting together and making lots of medicine, and individually making a lot of medicine and donating and using our services and our medicine to just give away. And that's what we've been doing a lot in the last 6 months.
So in a way, it kind of, and I don't want to cut if, Angelina, you have other things to add, but in a way, it feels like projects like y'all's are the ones that are sustainable for the times that are arriving. You know, like the projects that were really like profit margin based and not people centered are the ones I feel like that will more easily collapse unless you're a big
yeah.
But yeah.
1,000%. I mean, even joke. I mean, we used to say that we're like, dude, we were created for this. Like, they were, you know, we always be manifesting the revolution and the end of days. I mean, we're really like anti-capitalistic. I mean, for me personally, I'm an abolitionist, so like, I'm all about like I'm always trying to think like how do we survive post-capitalism, you know, like, so I was privileged and able to buy this home because I have my VA GI Bill, and our goal was for us to buy a house, like, Brujitec, so it could be, like, our headquarters, and that was what our, like, original plan was, and then everything collapsed and happened, but I'm still preparing our space to be all, like, and it's a small space, and it's a small area, but I'm working with local, like, gardeners to make garden space so we can feed the neighborhood, we can feed our communities, to hold classes, like, you know, I'm still thinking, like, even though we're not actively what people think Brujitec is, we're still creating, like, we're all still manifesting what it looks like. And that's providing, like, you know, sliding scale donation base, medicine, education, etc. So we're still creating that. So hopefully by the time when things, like, whatever happens, that we'll have enough food, we'll be able to teach people how to garden or, like, do herb, you know, like, hood gardening, and, you know, being able to have people come in and make medicine because, you know, we have that process. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're still thinking, like, how do we operate? My partner has been providing sliding scale donation base mechanic. Like, he's been teaching people how to fix their cars, and he actually even, like, helps people fix the car. So we already do that, you know? And Brujitec is not just us. It's, like, the community members and people providing, like, mutual aid. So, yeah, it's more, I think it's more, it's hard to explain, but definitely not a shop. That's what we always like used to say. We're like, we're not a shop. Like, everyone associates, like, no, we're more than that. We just needed something to get people, like, to come to help manifest and create this idea. But really what we are is revolutionaries and trying to create a new world.
I think that's, like, really important. Like, what Brujitec is, like, we've always said, yeah, it's never a shop. It's, like, this energy form that wanted to come into existence. It's something in, like, Ankelana and I and Hana are not, like, Brujitec. We are, like, we facilitate, you know, that energy. We kind of, like, help it extend out. It isn't anything that is, like, ours. We can't claim it, you know? And it is revolutionary. It's something that, you know, is different, and it continues to evolve, you know, and kind of guide us, you know, and tells us what it needs, and then we kind of facilitate that, you know. It's never been for us about, like, money or profits, yeah. You know, we are never gonna get rich from this, you know. So no. I think it's, like, people understanding the concept of Brujitec is hard because it is a really big concept, you know, and it's something that continues to grow and take a different form all the time because it is part of the past, the present, and the future, you know. And it's, like, it's its own energy. It does what it wants to do, and we're just here for it, you know?
Amazing. So, okay, so many things. Like, so when you say, like, when y'all are, like, we're not a shop, and then you close your brick and mortar, did you close it forever, or is it, like, temporary, or or unknown, or, yeah. Don't know. So then I really love, there's so many themes that are coming up here. We're talking about, like, mutual aid. We're talking about accessible healing work. We're talking about, like, you know, healing, like, the intersections kind of between, like, providing healing work and, like, addressing, like, gentrification in urban areas. And what I'm interested in, and, like, abolition. So kind of, like, there's so much about that I think is amazing. And I'm really interested to hear about, you know, I don't know that much about the community. I don't really know anything about San Diego, except that it has, like, a lot of military influence. and I've heard that it's like kind of conservative, but I don't know anything about like Logan Heights where y'all are at. So like, I guess like, how do you think like the abolitionist mutual aid movement is happening in your communities?
I don't know.
let's just say like, I feel like I'll just say very little. I grew up in Logan in San Diego my whole life. I think what Angelana, Hannah, and I, Bruhi thinks is like, we've been met with a lot of resistance.
Yeah.
In our community. What we do is very special, with a lot of very different intention. And let's just say it's very rare. Like all the topics of conversation that we're having about mutual aid, about, there are small, tight knit communities doing this work, and that those are the people that we're in touch with.
Yeah.
But it is very small and spread out. Even in Logan, where we had our storefront, people didn't want to talk about gentrification. Like the businesses that are brown, you know, and that if they're affected by, you know, all of that, they don't want to talk about it. So it is a very, when you say it's a conservative town, it is a conservative town on many levels. So we've been met with a lot of like, we've been well received with the communities that love us, and a lot of people do, but we also are a lot of friction for a lot of people.
Yeah. And it was really interesting. We had this really cool, in a very brown fashion, our grand opening was like 4 months later. We had like a huge grand opening party, and it was very queer and very brown, very black. Dope as fuck. It was the coolest party ever. I mean, I'm
ever.
Sure.
Ever. I said ever. The coolest ever. Party ever.
And it was in this really cool, like, space called Chicano Art Gallery, another radical, like, art space that Irie's practically siblings with this person. And we didn't think what we were doing was so, I mean, I don't know, I guess because I exist and my partner always reminds me, he's like, babe, you live in this bubble and you forget the whole world is not this little bubble that you live in. And so we created this and we're just like, hey, everyone's like this and everyone. And we had the drag queens come up to us and they're like, never in our life did we ever think we would perform in Logan, in our home, where they would not have accepted us. And it was just like, fuck. And our space was extremely black, brown, indigenous, and queer. And so our space, like our existence was ready, like very like, you know, right, like down the street from Nosco. So, but I think us, I don't know, I feel like all of us, we were just not aware. I think it was just us. It's like, this is who we are. This is us existing. And we didn't think what we were doing was out of norm, you know. But I remember like people being like, how do you survive being sliding scale, or like a lot of people in the community is like, I never used to come here, I never felt safe here, now I like to come here because you guys are here. And it's like all these little things that you forget because you are in that existence, you know. And but that was really, that was what like hit me. And then someone reached out and said they want to document us on a historical thing for San Diego, being like historical. Like what? Like how are we historical? What is it? But it reminds me like, oh shit, when you walk around you're like, yeah, fuck, no one is like that. Like that's why we created the space, because there was no one like us. But when we look at LA, I think because we're like only 2 hours away from LA, I'm like, everyone's doing it. But no, that's LA. LA is doing it, not San Diego. And I forget that. And then like New York is doing that. And like, you know what I'm saying? But I feel like, oh, but you know, that's us, but we're not. That's not us. We're in a very conservative town.
And it's interesting you bring up like, okay, it's happening in LA, and something happening, I think, right now, because we're in a movement of like national uprising and global uprising, is there's this real focus on these specific metropolitan areas that are considered more leftist. New York, LA, Portland, Chicago, Atlanta, et cetera. And you know, there's this real spotlight on those areas. But then I think about, because I live in like a little Mojave Desert community that's very conservative, And I think about, but I'm involved in mutual aid organizing and like a lot of stuff here. And I think about like, we need to bring voices. We need to, you know, when you're talking about like the uplifting, like I see the future as being like uplifting, like Black, Brown, Indigenous, queer, like gender queer voices, like disabled voices, etc. It's interesting to think about what's happening in these areas that aren't oversaturated with like cool people doing like the cool stuff, you know? So I love hearing about, you know, the resources that you're offering in you know, your communities in San Diego and around. And I'm wondering, like, I know this is a big question again, but like, what types of, do you have like ideas about how you see yourselves like growing and like flourishing and like continuing to provide for your communities, like to adapt to these times?
Well, I just want to say that you just said part of our mission statement, kind of, because like the people that you highlighted, because that's always been our focus. Black, Brown, Indigenous, trans, queer, disabled, marginalized folks. So I just want to like say that again, because that's our focus. That's who we, you know, put the spotlight on. We want to be helping, we want to be highlighting, we want to be uplifting those folks. And I think that because that's our mission and our focus, we don't exactly know what it's going to look like. We have dreams, we want to be mobile, we want to not have like a storefront again, I don't think. We want to be able to move with the people, go to, you know, be able to go to the protests, go to where the people are and where the people need us.
Yeah.
And offer support, however that looks.
I think also just like taking this opportunity to kind of continue to expand and grow individually, you know, because that's what, you know, makes us so strong is like Ankelana, only Ankelana can do what Ankelana does. Only Hana can do what Hana does. Only I can do what I do. You know, so it's like growing, you know, in our own rights and continuing, you know, to learn and teach. Like I want to kind of touching base on a little bit of what you said, like I'm going to grad school. I have to move to New Mexico. But it doesn't mean that like Brujitex doesn't exist just because I leave, right? Mm-hmm. Because my mission, because my sole purpose is to acquire information, to infiltrate spaces, to go and access these places that are not privy to us, that are hard for fucking us to get there, that are a big fucking sacrifice and come at a great cost. But I'm willing to do that for my community because what I do is I'm gonna go access shit that's being hidden from us to come bring it back, you know, and to help people continue facilitating their healing journeys, which is like all of Hana's, Ankelana's, and my, that's our mission, you know? So that work is forever. And what it will look like is whatever is called for at the time, at the moment, right now. We'll always be able, with what we have, be able to give what we have, what we have acquired personally, we will be able to give that in that moment. So I think for us, it's like Ankelana is going to go and teach, you know, about medics, you know, and like medic training. That's the future. That's right now. People need to be equipped with that information. She has that. She's going to teach that, you know, like, and so we all have these things that we're going to continue to gain access to and then give access to. And I think that's the main thing for us. It's like, what do we know and how can we share it and give it so that we all are more equipped now and for the future? So I think that's Brujitex today, tomorrow, and always.
Amazing. And Irie, what are you going to, you're moving to New Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
What are you studying?
Art therapy and counseling.
Oh, right. Yeah. You said that.
Yeah.
And then, Anjelana, can you talk about doing the street medic stuff?
Yeah. Arranged by this beautiful, amazing person named Olympia. Olympia is born and raised from Logan, Yaki, and something else. I'm so sorry, Olympia. But they're indigenous, a nurse, and I met them through like one doing like a curandera thing from a Kumeyaay elder and Yaqui elder, and then I met them through Brujitex again, and they started creating the street medics, and their children are all so amazing. They have like the coolest children in the world, and they all, one is an EMT, so they started this collective, and I've been a part of it since, I think, a couple of years, I think, they've had it, and it keeps growing, especially with the protests, with movements, like, we were providing support a little bit with the Kumeyaay defense, like, fighting for their, fighting about the wall that they're building, and so that's the latest thing that we've been providing for, but, so, yeah, we do this thing where we teach people how to be street medics, and I've been wanting to do the herbal aspect for it for years, but I tend to be a procrastinator. It takes me a long time to make things happen. So I'm finally doing it this Friday, and you know, just covering like the herbal aspect. So a little bit about me, about my medical. I am a prior hospital corpsman. I did about 8 years in the military. So I have Western medicine and like combat training. Like I was training for combat and trained for emergency medicine, wilderness, all that stuff. And now I've used that knowledge and applied it now and blended with like herbal medicine and indigenous medicine and African medicine. And now seeing that like how we can blend the two, how can we do things that are preventive? So everything I do, I think of preventive medicine. So how do we make sure make sure your endocrine system is supported and, hydrating with herbs that are going to keep your electrolytes up, like the Jamaica and oat straw, nettles. And like, you know, these are ways I think when I do this work, it's always about preventing the injury. So I'll be providing that. And hopefully I make it a template where anybody can read it. Like it'll be out there. Anybody can access this information, but I'm sure there's a lot of herbalists who already did that. But for our community, a lot of them don't have access to that information. So, so we've been providing that stuff and doing just Medicare and also a blend with herbalism. And I hope I answered your question. I don't
know. Yep. And I wanted to ask, so like, are all of you like have some herbalism practice that you do, or? Not everyone. Yeah.
No, I think all of us do.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not as extensive. I feel mine is not as extensive as like Hannah's and Uncle Anna's. Uncle Anna, who went to school like for this, you know, and then Hannah, who's been like working with, you know, herbs for a really long time. But yes, definitely, like always, because of just in generally, like, you know, my lineage, my grandparents, you know, and like having being exposed and like drinking tea since I was a child, and like, yes. So in that way.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And Hannah, you're a clinical herbalist?
No, I didn't go to school. I took a lot of classes. Like I took as many classes as I could from like indigenous folks and also a lot of white folks. but I don't have any certifications at all. Mine is much more like practical. Like my mom got sick like many years ago, and I started making medicine to help her with her physical and emotional pains, and that's what I've you know, on what is it called, in hand experience, I don't know how to say, hands-on experience. And then, you know, I saw like a lot of differences and in her, and I learned a lot from her, and then with that I was able to grow that and extend it to other people, and then to be able to build a business with that knowledge and with all of that. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. And like, I'm not a clinical herbalist either. You know, it's like, there's so much to learn from plants, and there's so much like ancestral wisdom in plants as well. I'm curious, like, yeah, because I think there's like this movement right now that a lot of herbalists are being called to. And I also want to state, like, just, you know, clearly white herbalists such as myself, like we don't have, you know, because of white supremacy, it's easier for us to like put on the blinders and just like ignore, the intersections between herbalism and social justice. But what I think is happening right now, and this has always been something that I've thought about, because I you know, I started like a free herbal program in Eureka when I lived up there, and now I'm working on doing that in the Mojave Desert. But I think like that's the thing about herbalism, is it is revolutionary. It is a tool of the people. There's ancestral wisdom from all cultures, although much of it obviously is stolen in colonization. But I think like right now there's like, it's obvious like what herbalists are committed to utilizing this knowledge for collective healing, and which ones are like, I want to stay in white supremacy and just make this mm-hmm. a capitalist venture and continue to like make a profit mm-hmm. off of this. Which, you know, to, you know, it's like you have to, it's always hard, I think, because it's like, we live in capitalism, like we all live in capitalism. Not everyone has access to like intergenerational yeah. wealth and resources. So it's like, I'm not trying to like judge anybody for like, yeah. I bring in a profit from my herbalism, but like what I'm really interested in is like revolutionary herbalism, like bringing doing street medics and like offering free donation-based workshops in your communities and just like allowing this as like a healing tool. Because we're dealing with so much collective grief right now.
Yeah.
I mean, not only are we dealing with like climate change and police and state sanctioned violence that affect our health, but there's like so much grief in that as well.
Yeah.
100%.
Can I ask you, what's a clinical herbalist?
What is it? You go to school, it's like when you go to school and you actually get a certification for being a clinical herbalist.
Oh, so I'm a clinical herbalist. I never knew that. Awesome. Yeah, I found myself having to decolonize my herbalism because of what I learned, you know, because I was so desperate to connect to my roots and who I am, because, you know, being Boricua, a lot of our truths, if you live in the mainlands, if you live in the U.S., like, you don't know anything. You're so disconnected from your truth. And so, but I, now doing this work, so much of my family is like, oh my God, that's so much of what your abuela used to do. And, you know, but they were so closeted about it because everyone used to call them witches, and they were so afraid and that fear. And so it's like, these things that I lost opportunity of learning this medicine through them, you know? And then like my mom, my sister, my whole family, now my niece sends me pictures of all these books. She's writing her own little herbal books, like with watercolor, and she's learning herbal medicine because of my sister, my mom, and I are like keeping that alive. But so much of it is like intuitive knowledge and stuff like that. So it's like, when you're finding yourself, you find these institutions trying to find your truth, and then you shed that institutional, like, and then you're like, you know what I'm saying? It's like this weird way of like,
100%.
Like finally discovering yourself, and you're like, what the fuck, you know? And so now it's like, you know, but that's interesting. Yeah. And I would not ever consider myself a clinical herbalist. Like, even to this day, I still feel like I know nothing, and I've been practicing this for 7 years, you know, but I still feel like I mean, I'm not someone who, I can't retain knowledge. That's not my gift. Everything has to work with intuition. It takes me a minute to remember something. I have to, you know, I rely on a lot of books and a lot of like, you know, referencing, going back, but you know, a lot of it's just, they tell me, you know, so.
Yeah. So I wanted to go back to something that y'all said before, like when you were talking about your opening party and there was a lot of black, it was like very like queer centered, black, brown centered. And I'm curious, cause you were saying like a lot of people were like not feeling safe in the neighborhood that you live in. Do you think like the presence of Rujitex was helpful in like changing the kind of like understanding or like acceptance level? I hate the word tolerance, but I'm like,
yeah.
I don't expect that people are gonna wake up overnight and become like more liberatory, but yeah, I'm just kind of wondering like if you feel like even if the brick and mortar can't exist anymore and you're moving on to other things, like do you all feel like confident in like knowing that you made a long lasting impact in that community?
Oof. That's a big question.
Yeah.
it's a because it's not just like Logan Avenue, but it's Logan Heights as a community. And
there was already a queer black couple on the block there already. And I mean, they've already shared with their stories of not being accepted because, I mean, they're black, and I'm sure being a lesbian married couple made it even like another intersection and with disability. So their presence was ready there when we got there. But I think a lot of folks, when they said to us, there was no reason to go there because we have this place called Hillcrest that a lot of queer folks, you know, usually hang out. But again, it's not very safe for a lot of black and brown folks. So black and brown people just never really had their like spaces where they can go. And I think Brujitex was that for them. Like, oh, it's a black, brown, queer, you know, like it's, so I think that was, I think that's what they were trying to tell us when they said that they were feeling like comfortable to come is because there's like a reason, like there's a reason to come there because there's a space for them. I don't know if that makes sense.
You know? Yeah. I think that definitely we changed the dynamics of the street, of the community. I think that people, we were always talking about things that people didn't want to talk about or were afraid to talk about. So I think that our presence being there started conversations and did change things. Like there's a, you know, another shop that another healing shop popped up on the block while we were there, and where that was just never there. Literally, that kind of stuff was just never on the street. So. So yeah, I think that there are some changes that will, and I think we'll see, we'll continue to see some changes, I hope.
I mean, I don't know, post-COVID, I don't know. It's hard.
That's true.
There's so much happening right now, and things are changing so fast and so quick. And so like even the neighborhood, like even like the block where we were on, and I talk about that because it's a hub that's different than outside. That's outside. That's like its own little world, right? Like Logan Avenue where we existed. And like I still have the studio space that, you know, we occupied. So my presence is still there. But the, like that space is, it's like changing so fast right now. So what it was, it isn't anymore. And I don't think that it's going to be anymore either, like for the future, you know, but, I think that we did make, like Hannah said, like an impact and like at the time and for people, like, I think it changed a bit of their association. So like what they thought before maybe changed with feeling safe and being able to come to Logan, you know, and like spend more time there. And maybe those people still come to the park now and maybe they like, you know, feel more comfortable. So in that way, yeah, I feel like there's definitely, and then I think whatever we said in form will like always like leave its, like its residue will always be there, you know? Having the little cart, because we used to have a little cart outside. I still hear people talk about it. We used to have like a take one, leave one, and we would have like tampons, condoms, you know, like all these things. And at first it was super controversial for people, like, you know, because there's a lot of toxic masculine shit happening there. And they're just like, what the fuck, tampons, you know, and like, but, you know, people like miss it and they look for it. I think a lot of stuff like that. Yes.
Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. It's hard to see. I don't know. I guess it, for me, it's hard to see that, you know, like it's hard for me to see like how we've changed or impact things. I don't know. That's just not how my mind works or see things.
It's kind of hard to do. I mean, I know it's a big question because it's like so soon, like, maybe when y'all are like elders, you'll look back and know, and then you'll be able to see like the historical context for how things may have changed. But I think it's like, yeah, it's interesting to think about that, just the way that like radical collective spaces can like move communities, because we need that shit right now, right? Like, well, I mean, everything is so, we're like living in fascism right now. Like it's like straight up fascism.
Yeah.
anyway, I'm like not gonna go on that. But I feel and it's hard, I think, also just like off the cuff, because I wasn't gonna say this, but it's like, I don't know, like being a healer or whatever, which I have a hard time taking that label. But you know, all of us, we do different healing work. It's like, it's hard, I think, in these times, because there's like people come to you and they want hope. And for me, like, I try to be clear with everyone, like, I'm not going to provide manufactured hope. Like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I have some ideas in my head that I'm not going to say that aren't super hopeful. But I also think, like, anyway, I'm not going to, But I think it's also like how to provide people with hope in a time when things are really bleak. But then again, like, I know that like things have been really bleak for Black and Brown communities forever, and myself and my white counterparts as well, like, we don't have to look at that as much. So it's like, yeah, this is a whole other thing, but I think like healing work has to address this, and also has to be like a safe container to be like, hey, it might not all be okay. The feds might come and grab you and put you in a van next week. You know, like, who fucking knows? Because that's the way that our world is going. But how do you feel empowered and strong and like in your liberation, like in this moment? Like, how do you be in that? How do you like allow that to radiate out to your community?
I think coming from an oppressed group of people, I think it's just in our blood. Like, I feel oddly alive. I don't know. I feel like this is nothing. This is from us, because being marginalized, this has been our life. You know, I read up on a Twitter, this Black person wrote, they're like, man, when I was going to grad school or something like that, the feds just took them off the street in Harlem. And that's where my parents grew up. They grew up in Harlem. And they said, they snatched me up, and the person said, I thought I was kidnapped. And this was like 10 years ago, they're talking about. This shit's been happening to us, like, as brown. So to us, I think it's interesting for us to witness, like, oh, wow, white folks now know what we're talking about. I think like, you know, my partner and I always see what's going on in Portland or Seattle, and we're like, oh, shit, you see what they just did to that white person? Like, this is crazy. Like, we would never thought we would see the day that white people were experiencing what we experience on the day-to-day. And then it's worse for someone who's dark-skinned, Black, like, you know, queer, trans, you know, their existence is just like, that's their life 24/7. So I think it, for me personally, speaking from my like experience, it just feels like, it oddly doesn't feel any different for me.
Right.
But it feels a little more hopeful, because it looks like a revolution. I think that's where I'm like, yay, hopefully like this shit like burns. And I mean, my worry is I'm afraid of those who are not going to be able to know how to survive this. You know, that's what I'm worried for. But like, for hood people and for people like us that we've been through this, it's like, man, we've been surviving. We've been learning how to do mutual aid, you know, with each other. Yeah, it's a really interesting, complex feeling I'm feeling, you know.
Because I don't feel like I'm radiating, like all this, like, hope and light. I feel like I'm doing everything, like I said, I normally do. Like, my life is, like, again, I was born and raised in Southeast San Diego, like, Logan Heights, like, this place was not what it was now. It was a fucking gang war, like, crazy, like, space. So I'm on a day-to-day, like, survival, like, by the moment. You know, I'm single, like, my mom's a single mother of five. Like, you know, we're just, like, here for the day, really. If we can make it through that, then we're good. So I'm just going about what I do every day, right? And then now I have the capacity to not just do it for my family and for myself, but also extend that out to people in my community, right? But it isn't like I'm saying that this is all for these ideas of hope. like, you know, I'm doing it because this is what I do daily and this is what my life reflects. And like, I have a little bit more to share and give, but this is my day-to-day survival. So I'm not standing here and saying that this is in hopes that the world will be better. This is because this is what we got to do today to get through today. And that's all I know. I don't know more than that, you know? So I don't know what the future would look like. I can't provide anybody hope for that, you know? You best not have a conversation with me because probably not going to give you the answers that you want, you know?
Nope, I'm not.
Yeah, and I mean, and I wish I could say, but in that way, I am not a fortune teller. I can't predict the future in that way. Yeah. So for me, it's just like about that, you know, I'm pushing through the energy that needs to happen for today and hopefully for tomorrow and whatever. And if anyone wants to perceive that as light or this or hope, then that's their perception of that, you know, but I'm not saying that. I'm just saying this is what needs to happen for the survival of us right now, myself, my family, and my community. And that's it.
Yeah. And for me, I definitely have like a lot more privilege. I get to live in a house, my husband's family's house, and being a mom of three, my perspective is a little different. My priorities are a little different, but I think that the hope that I have, or I don't know if the hope is the right word, but what I have is that I know that I'm building every day with my garden and with my medicine and getting those things ready for whatever happens. And I know that I'll be fine whatever happens, because if I die tomorrow, I'll also be fine. But like, you know, whatever happens is like, my hope is in my children, and I'm teaching them everything that I know, even though they're really small. And then just spreading my medicine as much as I can. Right now I'm in like a good place. So I'm like, okay, as much as I can give right now, that's all I can do. That's what I can do. And then tomorrow, whatever happens, is maybe it's different, but we're just adapting and building and, you know, doing all the things that we need to do. And yeah, I think my hope is just that my hope is in me building for our collective future. So what does that look like? And what do we know how to do? And I know how to make medicine, so that's all I can do right now.
Yeah, totally.
Did that answer your question?
I love it. I love everything y'all are sharing. But like, Anna, when you were saying like, all I know how to do is make medicine, that's sort of how I've been feeling. Like I've been like, okay, well, I can donate medicine. That's like a really solid thing that I can do. So I've been doing a lot of that. But yeah, we all kind of have to find our place. And a question that I wanted to ask, and then like the way that the conversation went and some of the stuff that just came up kind of made me think about rephrasing this, because it's a question, and I just want to acknowledge that the question that I want to ask is also rooted in my own privilege, because what I wanted to know is like, what is your advice, or like, what is your thoughts to people that might want to do similar projects, but like, Irie, like you just kind of touched on this, like it's not a choice. And I think like, as white folks, we begin, you know, more and more I'm seeing like, wake up and like, then we're like, okay, are you really gonna make this commitment? Is this really gonna be, or is this a fucking black square on your feed? Or are you really in this? Because it's not glamorous. I'm like rambling right now, but so I wanted to ask originally, like, what's your advice to people wanting to do this? But then I know that it's like, people that need to do it are already doing it. People that are called to do it by the ancestors are already doing it. If people now decide they want to start, it's because they're waking up and they're getting the call. And I just want to put that out there as a context.
Yeah, so, I think that do it, you know, and even if it is something you haven't done before, because the world needs it. And so I think the best place to start is like, what are your gifts and what are your talents? What can you share? What do you already possess?
Yeah.
Because you can't start from scratch right now. You know what I'm saying? You have to just like, what do I have? What am I good at? And how can I use that to provide a service? And also, what do I feel like my community is missing? You know, like myself, in Southeast, there's a lot of houseless people that don't eat. So a lot of my mission is to get food for them. Like, all the time, as much as I possibly can, right? That's something I see, among a lot of other things, right? But that's a basic survival thing that I think people need. They need fucking food. And so that's just like one thing that I think about, like, how do I get them food? So something as simple as that, right? It's like, what are my strengths? What do I have? And then you do it. Don't wait for anyone else to do it, right? You start putting that work into action. You start kind of doing where, I mean, there is a shelter in your neighborhood. There's a houseless, but there is like, there, all that already exists. So like, what is your mission? What are you in line with? And like, start doing that research. What are your skills? And then, you know, put those things together and then start looking for those outlets in your community. And if you want to do that with people, I am sure in that process, you will find people that you will feel like are like mind, and then you connect with them, and then you start to do more and build on that. So just do it.
Do it
now.
Yes. I was going to say that for me, yeah, that was amazing, Irie. And I think that also just first starting with your own, like working on yourself. So your own healing, your unlearning, mm-hmm. all of that first. And then also like setting boundaries, knowing your capacity so that you don't get burnt out. You know, it happens to all of us. So I think that really working on what works for you, what are your own ways of releasing and, you know, and healing and your balance, all of those things are super important, because, you know, we don't want people to start and then get scared and then run away. So like, if you're going to continue this, you have to be working on yourself constantly. I've learned so much from Angelana and watching them, their daily rituals and practices, and really incorporating some of those as much as I can. Like I said, I'm a mom of three. I have very, very little time to myself. Like, even bathroom time is sacred time for me. I get interrupted 20 times, you know, even in that space. So I will just say this one little thing, that literally me walking to the mailbox every day, which is, I don't know, 50 feet from my house, like, to put away, like, if I'm sending something out to somebody, which I do like 4 or 5 times a week, that those 2 minutes are so, like, you know, amazing for me. That's when I do my energy healing and my prayer. That's when I'm like all by myself. And so even that and grounding literally in those 2 minutes. So just like having those things in mind, where you're really, you know, always coming back to and centering yourself first and last during the process of helping others and seeing where you fit in.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with Irie and Hana big time. My sister, she's so cute. I come from a really dope ass family. And my sister, I was talking to her yesterday, and she's like, she's turning 33 And she's like, you know, finally, she's feeling like now she's finally stepping into what she wants to do. And there's a quote she was quoting for me from this movie called Robot. And I was like, find a need, fill a need, something like that. And so that's, you know, that's a beautiful, like, mantra. It's like, you know, find what the need is, like Irie was saying, like, find what it is and fill that need. And if you can't fill that need, maybe you can organize, you know, like finding your strength. But for me, I think the most important thing, what I'm seeing throughout a lot of movements, is the decolonizing process. So many people come to and do these movements still with this colonized thought, and I'm like, we're not gonna get the fuck out of this shit, because you're still coming with the same bullshit that got us here in the same place. That's insanity, doing the same thing, you know, like we've done before. So I think for me, and it's so hard, I mean, I don't even know where to begin from that, like, and how to help people get there. But really, I think the most important thing is, like, we need to do our internal healing first. Now that still happens all day, every day. I mean, I started my process in 2010. I'm still doing it. Like, it doesn't go over. Yeah. But understand, me implementing my meditative practices that I did in 2011 has fucking changed my life now. Like, it has improved my life. Now, another thing is, focusing and calling that in. I had this dream of having a collective in 2012. I dreamt of this. I didn't know what that looked like. I just wanted people to have a radical thought. I didn't know what that was. All I knew was, I didn't know who it was. And I met so many people along the journey thinking, okay, this is it. And it wasn't it. Okay, this is it. And it wasn't it. You know what I'm saying? Because it wasn't the time. And I didn't have the radical thought process. I mean, don't get me wrong. I started with the Occupy movement. You know, that's what really propelled my activism was the Occupy movement. But the way I thought then is so different than now, you know what I'm saying? Like, and even then, like, I wasn't even aware of my own oppressions. I wasn't aware of what I know now, you know? Like, I didn't know that these things. So that's why it's so important that we do this healing work. And I mean, and really, I feel like internal healing work needs to be front and center when we do this. You know, like, still do it now. Don't be like, oh, I'm not healed, I can't start. No, start the work. But there's going to be a lot of humility and humbling happening to you, and there's a lot of ego death.
I love everything y'all are saying. And since we've been talking now for, like, quite a while, I feel like we could, like, keep talking. But I wanted to just give a little bit of space for y'all to just kind of, like, shout out your projects, like, how folks can support you, how they can learn more about what you're doing, et cetera.
Well, I guess they could just email us at brujitexdelbarrio at gmail.com. I don't know if you can write that somewhere.
I will put it in the show notes, yeah.
Yeah, if they need any of our medicines. So herbal medicine, so teas, we do CBD, lots of stuff for physical pain, tinctures and things for emotional pains. We have art and shirts and that show beautiful art from Irie. So that's kind of like, you know, our stuff. So if anybody wants to get in touch with us, they can reach out to us that way. Oh, and follow us on Instagram.
Yeah, Brujitex del Barrio is our Instagram, and Hannah has her own Instagram as well. And I started a new project with my sister, and it's called Por La Mano. And we're basically just like self-taught, you know, like artists, and like we are gonna now, you know, want to provide services for the community, for the revolution, basically, you know, like whatever your art, your propaganda, whatever, you know, like we're here to print it, you know, we're here to spread our message, and like we're learning this whole new thing, and we're here for the community, and like to share that space and to skill share, to creatively workshop through things, and to be able to just like, you know, spread out the revolutionary message.
Yeah. So I hope I'll start being active on social media soon. We kind of took a break. So both of my parents have cancer, living with cancer. And so I really needed to take a step back and really just like nurture myself and go through the grieving process. And also I had a house fire right before COVID happened. So I think I needed to take a, you know, because when COVID happened, none of us stopped working. We were still providing medicine and doing everything. But finally, when I got to move into our home, it just kind of crashed down on me. And I was like, fuck, I need to step away from the world. So I'm slowly getting back to, you know, seeing clients, doing my donation-based energy healings. I'm only doing like distance right now. I'm trying to learn of a little cool contraption where it'll be safe, where I can put my little arms through while they're like, you know, I have this little idea. And when I come up with it, and hopefully I come up with it, I'll show the world so they can do it. I don't know. And so hopefully I'll be start like being active again and posting things. And Hannah's been taking over like all our social media stuff. Thank you. And doing that to be more active. But hopefully we're still out there. I mean, like I said, we're still providing stuff for protests. You know, I slowed down just a little bit because, like I said, I needed time for myself, and we all needed time for ourselves. But I'm starting to feel like a little coming out, just a little, but I feel like myself is coming out. So, but yeah, I still season, you know, herbs and stuff like that. I'm still doing that. Hopefully I'll get back teaching, herbal series. I do a full systems herbal series, again, donation based, and teaching people how to, you know, work with herbs with their 12 body systems. And then, yeah, I have a lot of projects and ideas for Brujitec, so hopefully that happens.
Amazing. Well, I'll put all the show notes. And thank you all. It was really amazing talking to everyone. Thank you for agreeing to be on my podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you
so much. It's been, like, super fun. Thank you for, you know, being interested in the work that we do and, you know, creating this space for, like, ourselves and folks like ourselves.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's such an honor. Thank you. I'm so happy when you got your message. Hannah's like, I know you're a big fan of her. I'm like, oh, yeah. I was fangirling. I'm so happy.
Listening to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review in iTunes and check out www.riseupgoodwitch.com for more information about tarot readings and the apothecary.